The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to the Friday morning California time Space Show program. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you for tuning in today. A couple of announcements before we start. Our toll-free number for those of you who would like to give us a call today and talk with our guest, Frank White, 1-866-687-7223. Remember, no call screeners, so just be patient and we'll answer and bring you up online as quickly as possible. You can also email us today, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. You can also post a comment on our blog for this program, and we can get your message that way as well. Do check out our website, thespaceshow.com. So remember, there's a very detailed website newsletter on the homepage, center right, and that is uploaded fresh each week, Sunday, after the Sunday Space Show program. And it gives you the details of the week's programming, but it also, if you scroll down, shows you the programs we have booked on into the future. And then everything we do is archived, so you can very rapidly download our programs, or you can listen right off of our website. On the upper left, there's another menu, and that is has a lot of interesting things in it, but under support, you'll find our store for T-shirts, coffee mugs, and things of that nature with our logo on it, if you're interested in that. And then there's also in that upper left the instructions for how to listen to a live show as well as an archive show. That's under the menu item of Listen Live. The most important button is over center right on our homepage for supporting the Space Show, and there are multiple ways of doing that. But we are a 501c3 nonprofit with one O-N-E, GiantLeapFoundation.org. We're able to do these programs because many of you do financially support the Space Show, and it is your support that keeps us on the air. Remember, as a 501c3 nonprofit, if you're paying U.S. federal taxes, you get a tax deduction for your gift. And the same is true for those of you who pay California taxes, as we are a California public benefit corporation. For more information, email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com or go check out our parents' homepage, 1GiantLeapFoundation.org. And a couple of other very quick things. Remember that we are trademarked and copyrighted, and you are free to distribute our programs and download them and share them. But there are restrictions. Number one is don't do anything commercial with the shows. Number two, don't edit the shows and place any edits or clips or cuts up on YouTube or any other website, including your own. And then the last one is no written transcripts are permitted, even if they're for your own personal use. Our full copyright statement is at the bottom of every one of our website pages, as well as those of OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. If you have any special needs, special requests, or have any questions, don't hesitate to email me. I am available at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And we also have corporate sponsors. To those of you who individually support the Space Show, their banner ads are going across our homepage all the time. And from time to time, do check out what's behind the banner ads. These companies do change their content from time to time. We would not be doing the Space Show without the corporate sponsorship support, and we're very grateful for their support. So do take a look and check it out from time to time. There's also a huge Amazon link on the front page of our website, and they have multiple ways of supporting nonprofit organizations through your regular routine purchases on Amazon. So if that interests you, if you're an Amazon user, as I am, click on the Amazon link and you'll see the two different ways that Amazon does support the Space Show as a 501c3 nonprofit. For today's program, I'm very happy to bring back Frank White, and he is the guy who has authored the book, The Overview Effect. It's his, I don't know how to say it. It's his concept. It's his idea. He's helped develop it with others now over recent years. He has a new edition of The Overview Effect coming out, and there is a lot of activity around The Overview Effect, not just about his book, which is, it's a classic. If you've never read it, I think you need to go read it. And I don't know what else to say about that. Frank has also authored quite a few other books. His real bio, or full bio, I should say, is on our website, so you can check it out. But Frank is a lot more fun to talk about and talk with than talking about. So this may be one of those Fridays, Frank. Thank you for returning to the Space Show. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, and I was just sitting here reflecting, David, on the fact that you were interviewing me when no one else was, and you were talking about The Overview Effect when very few people were, and I'm very grateful to be back, but also grateful for your support over the years. It's been great.
It's been fun, and you know, your book, the original copy of it, was a big part of my writing my doctoral dissertation, as I've said before, and then, as they say, the rest is history as the years go on. But now there's a symposium coming up for the Overview Effect over in Europe, in the Netherlands. So let's start off, and this is new and a great development and shows how it's expanding. So tell us about the symposium.
Right. Well, let me give you a little bit of background, because it's kind of interesting in terms of where this will be held. It's going to be held in a small town called Kerkrade in the southern part of the country, and it's going to be held there because there's a new facility there called the Earth Theater. And the history of that is quite interesting. Hans Goebbels, who is the director of three museums that are part of a grouping there in Kerkrade, went to a dinner and he met two astronauts, both of whom were Dutch, I believe. They were talking about their experiences in orbit, and Hans is a person who creates experiences, and he said, "I really want to recreate that experience." And he set to work to do it with his colleague, Misha Horning. And he got in touch with me and said, "We'd really like for you to come when we inaugurate the Earth Theater." And this was back in 2015. "We'd like for you to come and talk about the Overview Effect and give people some idea of what they're seeing and why it is so important." So they have created something that I think is pretty close to what it would be like to be on the International Space Station looking at the Earth. I think it, for me, it resembles the cupola on the space station more than anything else. And as you look down into this view, you do see the planet changing, and it's as if you were looking at it from orbit, and that's exactly what they're trying to do. They also have a film that you see beforehand and a film you see afterward, which prepares you for the experience and then also puts it into context. Well, I did go there in 2015 and met everyone there, and we had a wonderful conference then. It was about a somewhat broader topic in terms of designing the Earth or designing the planet, and there were other speakers there on other topics, but I talked about the Overview Effect. And what evolved from there is that a number of us have been talking about having conferences and symposia that would be for people who are really interested in taking the Overview Effect out into the world, or as we say, bringing it down to Earth and making it relevant to people on this planet. And Felix Hoch is one of the people who got involved in this. He lives in Germany, and he started working with Hans and Misha to create the symposium. It was originally scheduled for this month, but we found, actually it was originally scheduled for the fall, and we moved it up to June, and we just found that there were plenty of people who wanted to attend but couldn't do it on short notice. So it's been postponed back to the fall. And the whole point of it, I think, is to begin deepening our understanding of the overview effect, bringing people together who've been thinking about it on their own terms. And, you know, for example, I'm going to be a keynote speaker, and I don't know if he will still be a keynote speaker in the fall, but originally Robert Poole was going to be a keynote speaker. And, you know, David, if you want to recommend another book, he wrote Earthrise, and it's a fabulous history of how people have seen the Earth from space, even before humans went into space. So we were going to have some history. Anahita Nazami is a friend and colleague of mine. She's a psychologist, a therapist in London. She just finished her PhD thesis on the overview effect, with particular reference to how it could be useful in counseling people and in helping people achieve greater mental health. Another speaker was scheduled to be Arno Wielders. Many of you may know that he is co-founder of Mars One, which is an effort to establish a new civilization on Mars. Daniela De Paulis, who's working on yet another overview effect project in the Netherlands, but up in the northern part of the country. She's an artist. I could go on, but people should probably take a look at the website, overviewsymposium.com, because it'll give you a sense of what we're going to be having happen in November. And again, I think there are two purposes. One is to bring people together from different disciplines and share their view of this important, what would you call it, important phenomenon that we're witnessing. And two, begin to discuss how do we share it? How do we bring it out so that it becomes part of the mainstream? From the beginning, I felt like I was a messenger, but not the only one. I felt like I was sharing what the astronauts were trying to tell us they had learned about our planet from being in orbit or on the moon. So this is not something to be held close. It's something to move out into the world. And I think we're at the point where that's exactly what we need to do, is have a movement around this phenomenon and its message to us on Earth, and then as we move out into the solar system.
When they set the dates, I suspect the symposium will be available for people to attend, correct?
Yeah, and it's going to be the first week in November, most likely. And I think we're going to have it, as I understand it, the idea is to divide it into 2 days. You could certainly go to both, but one day is probably going to focus on those people who are most intensely engaged with the overview effect already, and the second day may be more generally educational for those who want to learn about it. But it's still being formed, but it will certainly be publicized. And we have 3 or 4 months now to get the word out there and bring people together around this event.
I don't see your name as a speaker, Frank.
Are you looking at the overview symposium?
Yeah.
Now
I see you're on the morning of day one at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay, you're on the far right column. Okay. Because it wouldn't be a symposium on the overview effect without you.
I was beginning to wonder what you were looking at there.
No, you're over on the second
I'm
column
there.
On the right.
Yeah.
Okay, and then so that there is a group dinner on the first day, right?
Well, you're looking at the original program. It may be changing for November, but that was the plan previously, yeah.
Can people participate as speakers? I mean, how are the speakers being selected for the symposium? Or if someone thinks they can contribute, should they make an effort to get involved?
Right. People should keep an eye out for more announcements about this. Originally, when we were first planning to do this in June, there was a call for papers, and there were several people accepted to give papers and do workshops. And listeners should keep an eye out for further announcements, which I'm sure will be forthcoming. In fact, if someone wants to email me if they're really interested in this, that would probably be a good way to do it, and then I can pass that on to the organizers.
Yeah, I'm looking. They don't have, like, a newsletter to sign up for or something like
that.
They do have a contact email form, I guess, which you could use, or they can contact you.
Yeah, they could use the contact email on the site, or they could email me. And is my email on your site now? I don't know.
No, I don't usually put people's emails out unless they really specifically want me to do that. I always just say contact through me. But some people give it out on air. But if you want me to actually list it, I'm happy to do that.
You could put it on your site, and then people who are interested in the symposium or anything else we talk about could contact me.
Okay. You don't have a website, do you?
No, I don't have my own website. There is the Overview Institute website that people can use. But I think the best way to do contact around this would be through your website at this point.
Okay. This looks like it's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and we're hoping that it will be the precursor to another event that we're hoping to do in 2018 in the U.S., a similar one, but again, we haven't made any plans for that yet, but our idea is 2018 is a major anniversary, of course, of the 1968 Apollo 8 mission. And, of course, 1969 is an anniversary of Apollo 11. So our plan is to try to do an overview effect American version in one of those 2 years.
Okay. We'll look forward to hearing from you on that and see if you can
definitely can
do that. This looks like a lot of fun. So listeners, I'll put links to the symposium up on the website in the summary of the show today, so you'll be able to find all of that information. I'll also list Frank's email address in the summary as well, so you'll be able to reach him there too. Probably November is what people should plan.
I think it will be November, and we're pretty close to having a date. I think it'll be the first week in November.
A new story and a fourth edition of the Overview Effect coming out. So, AIAA is doing the fourth edition.
Yeah, I have to really thank them for that. As you know, Houghton Mifflin published the first edition, and AIAA has done 2 and 3, and now they've agreed to do number 4. And I'm really thrilled about it, David, because when I did the third edition, as I was working on it, you know, I was thinking, this is a lot of work. It's not as much work as the first edition, but it's a lot of work. And I decided, that's it. No more editions of the Overview Effect. But once I finished the third edition, I thought, there's so much more I want to do. There's so much more I want to say. And I think, like with any work of art or literature, you make it as good as you can, but you always see things you'd like to make better. So I, of course, everything I say and everything I can say is based on what astronauts have told me or cosmonauts have told me. And one thing I want to do is broaden the interviews and include more international voices in the interviews that I'm doing of professional and retired astronauts. But it's possible that I'll be able to talk with some really new astronauts, that is to say those who are going to be flying on Virgin Galactic or Blue Origin, or even taking a trip on Worldview, which, you know, is the balloon version of this. Even if I can, I did have three interviews with people from the Virgin Galactic world, including Richard Branson in the third edition. And there I was talking about what are you hoping for? Why are you so interested in this? And I'd love to talk to more people like that. But, you know, if I could talk to some of that group after they've flown as well, it would be, I think, a tremendous addition to the analysis. One other thing that's interesting to me is that when I finished the basic research for the overview effect the first time, I thought, well, this is really a theory as well as an idea. It's a theory of spaceflight, how it's going to affect people's thinking. And a good social science theory is always predictive. You need to use it to predict something to see if it's accurate. And I predicted that some people would respond to seeing the Earth from a distance by focusing on the Earth and becoming good stewards and being very interested in environmentalism and all kinds of issues related to the Earth. And I think that's become true. I mean, I think we really have a planetary civilization in almost every aspect except governance right now. But I also predicted that there would be people who would react by wanting to go out into the solar system. And I called that the Copernican perspective, you know, thinking about the Earth as part of a solar system. And I called those people solarians. And I'm beginning to see a lot of indication that there are such people. Can you guess one of the most prominent solarians I've identified at this point?
Of all the people that want to go out into the solar system, I mean, there are so many. And who's prominent? No, I wouldn't know who you're thinking. I know so many that are prominent, too.
Well, that's really an unfair question, but I'm thinking of Elon Musk.
Yeah, probably. I guess because he has a big vision in terms of the quantity of people going out. So I'd rate that a higher than people who say they want to go to Mars, for example. Or the countless number of people who have a solution for interstellar flight and say we're ready to go there.
But I do think
Elon would take the blue ribbon.
But you know, in talking to Arno Wielders, who is also scheduled to speak at the symposium and has his own Mars mission initiative, I picked up from him that the people that are volunteering to go on his journey are equally enthusiastic. I mean, they really want to be part of starting a new civilization. And they're not bothered by the fact that it's a one-way trip. They don't really want one. They actually want to go to Mars and start a new culture, a new society.
Do they really believe Mars One is going to do anything? I mean, are they true believers in it?
I haven't really talked to any of them directly, but that is one thing I want to do in the next edition of the Overview Effect is I'd love to talk to some of them and talk to Arno and talk to some of the people who may be signing up for Elon Musk's trip. But I am beginning to see to some extent that the prediction was right. There are people responding to this opportunity by wanting to go out. And there are others who want to preserve the earth. Personally, I think both things are critical. And I think we need the earth to be the place from which we leave, but it doesn't mean abandoning our own planet. I think that's part of the whole process.
You have an email from Sweden.
Okay.
So you're reaching across the pond, and normally this guy's contentious, but he's being nice right now.
Okay.
Bijan will probably be contentious back in his reply to me.
Okay.
Do you think there are any overview effects that are harmful, like getting dizzy so that a spaceship crew fails to do their necessary job, or even going out of your mind for the long term? Which, by the way, Bijan, all of these are documented psychological issues with Earth separation, and I have had the researchers of this work on the show many times, but I would never associate this with the overview effect. But let's hear what Frank has to say.
Yeah, you know, this is a very interesting question I've come across before, and I think that by definition, I basically define the overview effect as a positive experience. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That I defined it as seeing the Earth from a distance and realizing that it's a unified whole, that there is, that we're all connected, that we're all in this together. And so in that sense, you know, there is no negative overview effect.
It doesn't exist if it's negative.
Right.
Okay.
It's what I think people are talking about is, are there negative impacts of spaceflight?
That is certainly true, but
yeah, we can't deny that. And and I think that you and I talked the last time I was on, I believe, about the Earth out of view phenomenon.
Correct.
Have you had Nick Canis on to talk about that? He's more or less the creator of this.
Wasn't he on the show once with you?
No, that was another Nick.
Okay, then I don't think I have. Although I have,
right.
I have done a lot of programs with researchers, especially from Russia,
right.
On Earth Out of View. I don't know who Nick Canis is then.
Okay, well he's a retired professor at University of California, San Francisco. And
yes, I have. He's written tons of science fiction books, and he lives very close to me and goes to a sci-fi book club thing that he invited me to go to. Yes, I have his book, and I did have him on the show after you recommended it, and I guess
okay.
I could have him back as well. He'd probably love it.
Yeah. Well, I've been corresponding with him and talking with him about all of this, and I'm fascinated with that question. Again, what he talks about is the Earth out of view is what I would have called Copernican perspective, and it's beginning to relate, and again, I cast it as a positive thing. It's beginning to relate to the solar system as a whole system that we're part of, the overview effect being somewhat more relating to the Earth as a whole system that we're part of. But, you know, something occurred to me in thinking about this, and that's the following. The way we talk about Earth out of view is what we're saying is when people move away from the Earth and go past the moon on their way to Mars, suddenly they're going to be in unknown psychological territory, because all of spaceflight so far, we've still been able to see the Earth as the Earth, as a planet, somewhat whole and complete. As you move further and further, let's say you're going to Mars, it's going to reduce in size to the point where it's a point of light, really.
Right.
And I think anything we say about what will happen to the people who have that experience is speculation, just like we really didn't know what would happen when people went into orbit. But what occurred to me in thinking about it is the only people who will experience the Earth out of view phenomenon are people who initially experience the overview effect, because you would have to go into outer space to have that experience. And by contrast, all of us who live on the planet, in an interesting way, we have always had an Earth out of view experience. That is to say, of course, we can see the Earth as an environment, but we haven't ever really seen it as a planet and then seen it as a point of light. So it's going to be a very unique experience. And I'm fascinated by it. I don't know what will happen, and I don't know how people will feel, but in talking to Nick and other people about this, it seems to me that the people who go and live on Mars are going to relate much more closely to Mars than to Earth psychologically for that very reason.
Have you thought about how you personally would react seeing Earth as a point of light? Let's say you're going out on Elon's trip to Mars, or let's say Mars One actually gets higher than Southwest Airlines, and you're going to Mars with them, and you know, you're looking out the window and Earth is a point of light. How do you think you, Frank White, would react?
I think that I would be excited and also nostalgic at the same time, because I do think that we somewhat take Mother Earth for granted, don't we? We've always known about the Earth. We've always been on the Earth. Even when we've gone into orbit or the moon, we've always known we were coming back. And I think it's not just the Earth, but what you're seeing as you look at that point of light is that everything you know is there. Your family, your country, human civilization, everything that sustained you up till this point is now contained in that tiny sphere that you can barely see. But it seems to me that humans have gone through something like this in the past whenever, let's just say, people left England to come to the New World. They looked back, and at some point their home country disappeared and they couldn't see it anymore, and they knew they were on a journey that was probably never going to take them back to England. I think we've had some analogs of this in the past. And again, I don't think the people who go, I would not go on that trip unless I had kind of resolved in my own mind that Mars or wherever we were going was going to be my future.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It would have, I'd go to Mars as a tourist and come back, but I have no desire to permanently leave Earth unless the law is after me.
You know, that may happen, of course. There may be, not with you, of course, but
it may happen.
It may happen that people will leave because,
the IRS is after them. That's right, or the IRS or something.
Yeah, or the IRS, more likely.
You know, I have often thought what I would feel like or think about if I were seeing Earth as a point of light. So I don't usually play true confessions, especially on the space show, but because it's you, I'll do a little bit of it.
Okay.
Even though I'm 71, both my parents are gone, and I have an older brother who is not always in the best of health, and then I have a lot of cousins, but my immediate family is really just my older brother, plus I have, you know, two kids. And there are times when, even though my parents have been gone a long time, it is really lonely without them, even at 71. And I think people who have had very close relationships with their families and very good ones can identify with that. Death does not necessarily mean you get over it and you don't miss them anymore. And right. You can feel alone being surrounded by other family members and people that you like in the activities that you do in your business. There, you can still feel like, you know, this is a really big world, and yet I'm really alone. I'm without that which guided and led me all my life for the most part. And
absolutely.
And so I kind of think that if I were on that flight and Earth started appearing as a point of light, that while I'd be looking ahead to going to Mars and excited, I'd also probably have a real increasingly loneliness period of so disassociated with everything that was meaningful and important to me. The issue would be whether it could be controlled and kept into perspective, or if it grows into like a claustrophobic or panic attack, you know, that people have, where once it gets to a certain point, you're out of control and you have to be controlled by someone else or something. I compare that to being in an MRI machine if you're claustrophobic.
Yeah.
And you've got an hour and a half study where you have to be pretty motionless. And once the claustrophobic or panic starts setting in, it's pretty hard to stop it on your own. And so that would be, to me, could you contain these isolated feelings of emptiness and being really alone and disassociated, despite looking forward and being excited, or would you really need support? And I'm not talking about drug support. I mean, obviously, you could sedate the hell out of yourself. But you may need very skilled crew people to support you. Ground control would be too far away with the time lags in communication and probably
right.
bandwidth limitations to be particularly useful. So the crew would really need to be supportive and know how to recognize if people were, you know, coming up on some kind of psychological or emotional break or threshold. Because if they get out of control with this in a confined quarters like a spaceship, you know, if you're, you know, you can go to a movie and you know, get rid of it, you know, here on Earth, or step outside the MRI machine and it goes away almost instantly. But you, there's none of that's going to be available on the spaceship. So I think that everybody on the ship is going to have a collective responsibility for the psychological health of everyone else, and they're going to have to recognize that even really strong people that you don't see as psychological pansies are subject to something like this happening to them. And, you know, what are the signals, what are the warning signals? If someone says, you know, I'm feeling really weird, you need to step in and support them, and you would need training on how to do that. I think all of that is going to be part of that kind of a mission. I know there'll be listeners out there that will say, ah, Dr. Space, you're being a total wimp. We're tough people. You know, this hasn't got anything to do with how macho you are. And I think this is going to be part of such a crew. Now, we've not really trained people for this on our human space flight so far, although I'm assuming that NASA astronauts do get some kind of training on how to support one another, but also they can call ground control and the communications are almost instant. So it's not going to be the same going out to Mars or wherever someone wants to go. So I think it's a real valid issue to be concerned about.
Yeah, and I think there is concern about it, and I think that's why there are two or three different places where they're doing simulated long-term analogs to a Mars mission, because the other aspect of what you're talking about, number one, the Earth disappears and becomes a point of light. Number two, there is a time lag in communications, which can be irritating at the very least as you move further from the planet. Number three, you are confined in an artificial environment for several months. with other people, and you cannot get away from them, similar to Antarctica, I would suppose, or a submarine. And number four, possibly on some of these missions, you're not going to return, or you may not return to your home on Earth. Now, Elon Musk has said he thinks it's very important there be an ability to come back, that he thinks that should be a part of the deal. But I know with Mars One, that's not the intent. And even if there's a goal of coming back, you can't guarantee it. And I think what you're pointing to, David, is that we just don't know what will happen. It's almost, while we need to try to prepare for it, we don't know. We're going into unknown psychological territory.
Bijan has another one for you.
Okay.
So just to show you that he can be obnoxious, he wants to know, it's a two-part question. What is the reaction of the Flat Earth Society to the overview effect? So I don't know if you have any information on that or care to know, but if you have an answer to that, fine. If not, here is another question that may be more valid. Has the overview effect been diminished since the 1960s due to TV and video games that have emulated the visual experience?
Well, the answer to the first question is I don't know. I haven't heard from them.
Good.
I haven't heard from the Flat Earth Society. The answer to the second is I think that the impact of the overview effect, as communicated through pictures and video, has diminished through its ubiquity, in the sense that there's one sense in which it's diminished and another in which it hasn't. When I first thought of this possible impact of seeing the Earth from orbit or the moon, I didn't imagine it to be a shock or something overwhelming, but that people would just come to understand the unity and the wholeness and the systems nature of the Earth, because they would see it all the time, and they would take it for granted that, yeah, the Earth is a planet, it's a whole system, there's a unity to it. So in that sense, I don't think the videos and pictures have diminished that understanding. To some extent, it's what was predicted, which is people are sort of taking it for granted. On the other hand, the full experience of it, as the astronauts experience it, and as people in the 60s experience those first pictures, that has been diminished. The shock, the awe, the wonder, not for the astronauts, I think, but for those of us who are still here. The astronauts I've talked to, although they're better prepared than their predecessors in the 60s, tell me it's still an awesome and transforming experience for many of them.
I have another question for you from a listener. You'll love this one. Are you ready?
I am.
Sarah is in Seattle, Washington, and she says, by the time we actually are getting beyond Earth orbit in any meaningful way, meaning past the moon, and going to Mars or someplace else, and we can experience Earth as a little dot in the sky, I suspect back here on Earth we will have self-driving AI cars, self-flying AI planes of sorts, and all sorts of other AI stuff that has put humans maybe in a whole totally different category than where we are today. And we will be having our hands full adjusting with that experience and that perception. I also suspect that AI will be a very huge part of going to Mars or going beyond low Earth orbit, even to the moon. So my question is, if you add artificial intelligence into the mix, both as to its effect here on Earth on people, and then its use to take us beyond low Earth orbit onto Mars or wherever, so that we see Earth as just a little dot in the sky, are we going to be compounding these reactions that people have? Will we be able to handle the AI experience as well as the spaceflight experience?
Sarah, I do love that question. I mentioned to David before the program started, another area that I've been doing quite a bit of research on is artificial intelligence. I wrote a short story about it, which was published in an anthology of science fiction recently, and we're now discussing making it into a television series. I've also been serving as a mentor on the IBM Watson X Prize, and I haven't said much about this to anybody, but I'm also writing a book about the artificial intelligence question. So I've been thinking about this a lot, and I do believe, Sarah, you're right. The impact of artificial intelligence on space exploration is not getting the attention it deserves. And in fact, if some observers are right, how space exploration takes place will be tremendously affected by AI. You know, at the most extreme, people are talking about the singularity, and the singularity is that moment when AI, some form of AI, becomes super AI and surpasses human capabilities. And if that happens, we will actually be dealing with another form of intelligence on the Earth that might have its own ideas about Mars settlement and solar system settlement. In the near term, here's a thought. There is tremendous concern about job loss on the Earth as a result of artificial intelligence. For example, with self-driving cars and trucks taking jobs away from people who drive for a living. But also, AI can do a pretty good job with white-collar professions as well. A lot of discussions are happening in the AI community. What are we going to do about the job losses? And I think that could give a huge impetus to moving out into the solar system, because there we could, in fact, employ a lot of people, and we could employ them in cooperation with robots, androids, or however the AI manifests itself, to begin developing this new solar civilization. I just really haven't seen anybody talk about that, and I think that is a very, very fruitful area of speculation. I heard very briefly during the transition to the Trump administration that the direction of the Trump administration, consistent with his emphasis on jobs, was that he was going to put a huge emphasis on economic development of the solar system and focusing on jobs. I haven't heard anything more about that, but it seemed to me that was a, well, first of all, consistent with his philosophy, but more than that, an interesting and fascinating for me direction to go.
Yeah, I heard the same thing, but I don't think he has a moment to consider space, given all the criticisms and attacks and pressures and bungling and whatever is going on over there.
But Trump aside, it seems to me that we should start thinking about that. We are going to have these job losses whether we have a singularity event or not. We already do have job losses to artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence is no longer science fiction. It's all around us. We should think about it.
We have done lots of shows with different guests on the effect of AI on space manufacturing and space hardware development and space technology development and on global job markets. We've looked at different IMF and other reports on this. I mean, we've covered it, but the truth is we've never looked at AI as its possible effect on human spaceflight, especially beyond low Earth orbit. And I have a show coming up with the guy who talks about this and on fourth industrial manufacturing changes that are happening and forcing people out of jobs due to technology. I'm going to expand that conversation to spaceflight, because I think by the time we are ready, as Sarah said, to start doing this, I think AI is going to play a pretty significant role in that spaceflight. Even going to the moon, I think it will start showing up as a significant part of that spaceflight.
And Elon Musk has already showed a tremendous interest in AI, including with his new company Neuralink.
But he warns about it too.
He worries about it a lot, and he also Neuralink is really his answer to it, which is that essentially humans and the AI become symbiotic. We merge, in effect. We're not displaced. We actually become part of the super AI.
What happens to my dog? Is it going to have to relate to artificial intelligence?
Well, your dog, maybe there can be a little helmet for him, too.
AI for the dog, right? So that
why not? We
can consider AI's best friend as an AI dog, right?
Yeah. But there's another piece to this, and I bet you have covered this on the show, and I haven't heard it, but there's a lot of concern, too, about human frailty in the face of the space environment and how we're going to deal with that. So I really never get into this human versus robots in space as a dichotomy. I think it's going to be, and already is, something where robots who could also have AI capability would be part of the solution to that. They're definitely going to play a role in space development.
I think they are too, and I think there should probably start being some focus on what it's going to look like. And I think Sarah's question was right on the money.
Me too. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for that.
We're way beyond where we take a break, so I'm not going to take a break, but let me pause to thank the sponsors that I would normally read their messages with. So for the second half of the show, listeners, I normally thank, and I will thank now, but without reading their sponsorship messages, the Integrated Space Plan and the Space Symposium, Orbital ATK, and AIAA for their terrific sponsorship on the corporate side of our program today. And we appreciate it very much, and would not be doing the show without your great support. Do you see these issues, by the way, are not that I am aware of, addressed by NASA. Now, I don't know that to be 100% factual, but I'm on a lot of NASA mailing lists, and I don't see anything coming in like AI and spaceflight workshop at NASA Ames or at Marshall. I just don't see it. Do you think that our government space people are up on this? I know that they are planning projects, doing hardware in research with all of these sophisticated developments, but I don't know if they've connected it to going out in human spaceflight.
Yeah, you know, I can't say they haven't, but I agree with you. I have not seen anything on that. I have seen more than one story about robots that they're developing.
Yeah, like the little crawlers on Mars and stuff like that, but and other more human-like robots. But
right.
They don't seem to make the link to how this is going to interact with us on a spaceflight mission.
Right. Yeah, I haven't seen it, and it seems to me to be a fruitful area of research, and I can't believe someone won't do it. Interestingly enough, we talked about Elon Musk, who's certainly a leader in thinking about almost anything these days. I have heard Elon Musk talk about going to Mars. I've heard Elon Musk talk about Neuralink, which is a way of linking the human brain up with the AI capability. And I've heard him talk about the dangers of artificial intelligence. But when he talks about his plans to create a settlement on Mars, I really haven't heard him bring up much about artificial intelligence. And Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin, who is certainly engaged in space settlements, O'Neill-type space settlements, but also going to the moon. I've heard that Amazon is full of AI capability, and, of course, we know they're using robots very heavily. I really haven't heard Blue Origin talk about it. So,
well, their space tourism vehicle is without a pilot.
Is that so? Yeah, okay.
Maybe
that's it.
So, you know, it's controlled by ground controllers and
right.
and AI in the capsule. So
yeah.
That's
well, there you go.
That's their suborbital trip.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he'll get rid of all the cashiers and service people in Whole Foods now that he bought out Whole Foods.
Bought Whole Foods.
And we'll have robots helping us with our food selections and
right.
unpacking the foods and everything. Maybe it'll be the first robotic supermarket in AI. You know.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
And then we can check out. We can sign up for carrying the packages home or drone delivery. So
yeah, don't forget the drones.
Big change is coming with Whole Foods, perhaps.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
And he can offer maybe for every. You win the Whole Foods lottery and you get a flight on a Blue Origin spaceship or something. You know, you can do something like that to interconnect
right.
the activities together.
Right. Well, this is certainly an area to look into further, and I know you will, and I will too, as I work on my book. And I will, now that we've talked about it, I will include this in the fourth edition of The Overview Effect as well.
What else is in the fourth edition?
Well, I mentioned more interviews with professional astronauts and retired astronauts, more interviews with the new astronauts, and also a little more about the whole issue of going out into the solar system. That will definitely be in there. Also, as you know, all along with The Overview Effect, I've been thinking about the whole question of a philosophy of space exploration, the why. And I've tried to summarize that in something I call the Cosma Hypothesis. And in addition to working on a standalone book about that idea, I want to bring up more about that in the next edition. And I also want to do more on some of the work that David Beaver's been talking about, the co-founder of the Overview Institute, on cognitive research and cognitive science and what it might have to say about all of these questions, because, you know, all of these are questions of perception and how we see things and how we construct our worldview. So I would like to do more work on that. And beyond that, I'm not sure what else will be in it. One thing I did find, David, when I did the third edition and the second edition, I found that the first edition stood up pretty well over time. The essential features of what I was working on seemed to work still. And, you know, still having those astronaut interviews in the third part of the book was valuable in itself. One other thing I would mention about those interviews is that so much of my first edition was about how astronauts relate to the Earth. And as I worked on the Cosma hypothesis, I've realized not only are they the first people to see the Earth that way, but they actually see the entire universe in a way that none of us have seen it. Now, they don't see the whole universe, but they do see beyond the Earth. And many of the astronauts in my first set of interviews commented on that, but I didn't focus on it very much. And I'd like to bring that aspect of the experience out in a little more detail.
Before we started the show, you mentioned a program that you were engaged in, the Human Space Program.
Right. Yep.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, at the end of the overview effect, I said that it seemed to me that exploring the universe was not a job for nations, but for humans. And I proposed that we create a human space program, but I really didn't know what shape it would take. And so I made some suggestions and more or less left it to others to figure out what it meant. In parallel, though, I've been working for many years on the idea of getting academics involved in thinking about the big questions of what space exploration is about and what the big issues are. I've wanted to get economists to think about the impact on the economy of asteroid mining, and I've wanted ethicists to think about the question of should we really be using nuclear power to explore the solar system when we haven't figured out how to manage nuclear waste on the Earth, and what if we find life on Mars? Should we preserve it, or should we make Mars off limit to human development? What do we do there? And so on. I wanted to get people engaged in these questions who didn't think of themselves as space advocates like you and me. And so I called that the Academy in Space. And to make a long story short, that's now evolved with the help of one of my classmates from Harvard into what we're calling the Human Space Program. And the idea of that is we want to create a group of task forces, and we've identified 16 task forces of experts or people with a deep interest in the topic to look at the key questions that we think are needed to be answered. And give those task forces 1 year to come up with action plans for each area, and we would then bring that into a comprehensive blueprint for exploring and developing the solar system. It has a lot of parallels to one of your sponsors, the Integrated Space Plan. I think, though, that we're going to be looking at some other issues that they're not looking at. However, we would certainly take into account all the work they've done at thinking through this question. Once we have that blueprint, we want to share it publicly, and we want to share it with the leaders of the various space movements and say, what do you think? Can you sign on to this? Does this make sense to you? We have no power to compel anyone to sign on, but it's almost as important, I think, to have the dialogue and the discussion early on as it is to have people agree to the plan. I've analogized this to the previous great ages of exploration and being on a frontier, where a lot of things took place that we'd like to do better, we'd like to do over again. Certainly on the western frontier of the United States, there were events and episodes that when we look back on them, we wish we could have done a better job. And similarly with colonization and exploration in the early years of the nations of Europe going out and exploring the globe, the interaction with indigenous people was not positive, to put it mildly. And so what I'm hoping to do with this project is to initiate a dialogue before we get to the point where you can't do anything about it, where we're talking about a fait accompli. And actually, I think it's kind of urgent. You know, just as some of the issues we're facing on the Earth, like climate change and war and peace, if you will, those issues are kind of urgent to resolve. And I think these issues of how we're going to open up the solar system are pretty urgent, because many of the questions are going to be resolved without dialogue or discussion in the next 5 or 10 years.
Most likely you have another email that I'll read to you. Tom is in Seattle. When astronauts are on the space station, the Earth fills their field of view completely. They can see the limb of the Earth, the thin atmosphere and details of natural disasters inspires preservation and oneness in even the most hardcore military pilots. Around the moon, the Apollo astronauts didn't have their perspective of Earth for a duration, and the field of view is very different. A golf ball with broad features outnumbered 100 to 1 by black space. When we have astronauts stationed in orbit around the moon, how will the thoughts of Earth be different? I think it will be even more acute.
Hey, Tom, you're right. And this was one of the, you know, you learn a lot when you write a book, because you have to get your thoughts in order. And honestly, when I started writing the book, I had not really thought about the difference between Earth orbit and the moon. And that was really one of the things that became very apparent to me, was the big difference. And you've described it really accurately, that that the Earth is still very, very close when you're on the space station, or when you're on the space shuttle, or when you were on the space shuttle in the past. And when you're on the moon, or if you were orbiting the moon or going to the moon, you do see the entire Earth. And you not only see the Earth from space, but in space. And that realization of it being a planet within the universe becomes a much more powerful realization. If you read the book, Gene Cernan brought that out most directly. And he said that there were really two different space programs. One was the orbital program, and the other was the lunar program. And interestingly, so much of what we've done in outer space has essentially been orbital. We just had that amazing outburst of lunar exploration for 4 years, really, and it was over. I think Tom is right. When we do go back to the moon, and it now looks like we will, the overview effect in that sense is going to begin to have a stronger impact on us once again. And incidentally, David, you know, we talked about this. I covered this in more detail in the book, The New Camelot, which Apogee Prime has recently published. And it brings out the really radical importance of the Apollo missions, way beyond what we normally think about, I believe.
Do you believe that there might be some kind of mysterious, I don't know how to word this, but I'll just sound like a kook, so go ahead, I'll just go ahead and do it. Some kind of mysterious power or influence of the overview effect that has played a role in keeping our space program landlocked to orbital for so many decades?
That is a really interesting question. I don't know that I would say a mysterious power or force, but many of the astronauts commented on, oh, you know, when we went to the moon, we were looking outward, but what really came out of it was looking back at the Earth. It does seem that in a way the view of the Earth that Apollo gave us reminded us of how precious the Earth was and how much we needed to pay attention to it, especially the environmental issues. And it's also, I think, relevant to know that the Apollo missions happened during a really terrible time on the Earth for Americans in particular. But Americans were also pushing the program. But we were having assassinations. We were having riots in the cities. It was a really, really difficult period. And there's no question that all of those things combined refocused our attention back here. And it only began to change recently, and I think largely the change has been through the impetus of private sector interest and money coming into this field of action. But it shouldn't really ultimately stop further exploration. I think it should just say we should not do it and abandon the launch pad, which is the planet Earth.
So you think there would be a lot of other things that have come up that have played a big role in keeping our space program to being basically an orbital one instead of boldly reaching out?
I do. I think there have been other reasons for that. But I don't think the overview effect is irrelevant to it. I think it did remind us that we had work to do here. We are doing that work, I think.
I have another email.
Okay.
You'll love this one, too.
Okay.
This is from Ginger, and Ginger is in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay.
And she says, I am a stealth listener to a lot of space show programs, meaning I hardly ever call the show, or I also don't post on the blog, but I listen to a lot of the programs. There is a participating crowd of space show listeners that believe that going into space is with humans and doing settlements or exploring is going to save humanity, develop multiple kumbaya moments, and bring the world closer together. I believe these people think that space development and settlement and all of these issues are a religion rather than the more traditional religions we have here on Earth. You've probably heard this many times before. Mm-hmm. This recently came up on another space show program where a listener was talking about moon programs and kumbaya moments. Do you believe that the overview effect contributes to that kind of we can go out and save the world through space development? And do you think space development has the power to change and bring the world together and provide never-ending kumbaya moments of togetherness?
You know, I'm sorry. It's the kumbaya reference that I'm laughing at.
It's hilarious, but I hear it all the time. So.
I know. Ginger, I'm not laughing at you. I think your question is really very important. First of all, even though I've denied it more than once, I have been accused of starting a space religion, and that never was my intention. Although, I have to say, the moment in which I had the idea for the overview effect or the experience that led me to do this work was an epiphany. And I do believe the experience of seeing the Earth from orbit or from the moon can have an impact on a person to the point where it changes their behavior and their worldview and their perspective, and they do feel more deeply than they did before that we have to search for better ways to collaborate, to work together, and to have a certain amount of unity here on our planet. It doesn't mean that it's automatic. I guess that is what I'm trying to say. You know, many of the astronauts who I've talked to worked on the International Space Station, and they talked about the International Space Station as a model for how life could be on the Earth, because they talked about how they were astronauts and cosmonauts, and they were from different countries and different cultures and different backgrounds, and yet they had a common mission. They worked together, and even when their own countries were fighting among themselves, they were able to maintain collaboration. And there's an example of, it's not mystical, it's not religious, it's not something metaphysical, it's people working together toward a common goal. That is what I think it can do. And that is what I think it has done. Now, David, you know, I've talked about this before, that in 1963 we lost an important possibility there, because President Kennedy, how he saw this far into the future, I don't know, but I think he began to understand that space exploration could be a unifying venture for humanity. And we now know that he was constantly proposing a joint mission to the moon with the Soviets, and they initially rejected it, and then later they came to agree that maybe we should try this. We also know that before the United Nations, he proposed all nations of the world be involved in Apollo and in space development. We lost that when we lost Kennedy. But when I talk about the human space program, that's what I'm talking about, is that opportunity's there again. We have the people, we have the resources, and now we have this view of our planet that is unique. And I do believe there is an opportunity to capitalize on that. And but it's a choice. It's not something that will just happen in some mysterious fashion.
You have another question. But you're bringing him out of the closet.
Good, good. That's great. Happy.
Todd is in San Diego, California, and mm-hmm. and he says, I'm really curious if you think that somehow getting the message you've been talking about with David and the listeners today into the hands of actual government policymakers, not just here, but perhaps in Europe and other countries, maybe even a rogue country or two like Iran or North Korea, would it make a difference in how they legislate?
Yeah, I think it would. Another recurrent theme among astronauts has been a summit conference in space, which isn't practical under current circumstances, but they said more than once, if these guys and gals could see what we've seen, they wouldn't act the way they act. They wouldn't pass the laws they pass. I think in a way the whole mission of the Overview Institute, what we're trying to do with the Overview Symposium, we are trying to make this idea or share this idea, share this astronaut experience with everyone, but of course where it could make the most difference would be with decision makers. And I'm very much committed to that, and I do believe it would change, or has the potential to change, perception. I think we've made a little bit of progress there already, and I think there's more progress to be made.
There are advocacy organizations that put together their resources and they go to state legislatures as well as Congress to lobby on Mars or, you know, what our space policy should be. You know, a lot of the organizations have these efforts, like March Storm is one, but AIAA has them too and all that. I don't know that the Overview Institute or the Overview Effect is large enough or has the funding, but have you ever thought about having a congressional legislative blitz on a program of getting them to have overview perspectives?
No. No, you know, actually, that's a good question. One of the things I've been thinking about and I wanted to say at the symposium is I think that we have come to the point where we need a movement. We need to translate this into a movement. I hadn't thought specifically about a blitz with Congress, but why not?
Why not is right. You'd have tons of participants coming to Washington, just like March Storm had. You'd need to establish a training program and a way to talk to the people.
Right.
You'd have to have some organization with it and some people who know how to navigate around and talk to people. But I bet you could do that for 2018, and you would have gobs of people wanting to come from every state to participate in an Overview Effect congressional blitz.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good idea, and I think, you know, it seems to me that politicians are becoming increasingly more divided and partisan for whatever reason, and it's okay to have differences, but again, the Overview Effect is really a vision of unity that doesn't really deny that there is diversity and difference. It's both things that are true. The Earth is a very diverse place with a lot of differences of opinion and different people and different species. But when you see it from orbit, you do see that that diversity is contained within a unified whole. That is the kind of thing that needs to get out there and become part of the thinking of our governors, our governing elite, if you will, as well as everybody else. And, you know, one thing we haven't talked about, and I'm a little surprised we haven't discussed it here, but it's not just an idea that we need to transmit it. It is an experience. The Overview Effect is an experience. And, of course, there's the promise of commercial spaceflight, but one of the new technologies that could make a difference is virtual reality. And, you know, Space VR with Ryan Holmes is a company that I've been connected with and trying to support. And they have a vision of, through virtual reality and imagery of the Earth from orbit, they could essentially make the Overview Effect experience available to people. That could be just as important as the idea, if not more important.
Well, with proper funding, you could give each member of Congress that you visit a little 5-minute Overview of simulation.
They might find that very interesting. I don't know that anybody's been doing that for them.
Probably not. They're probably,
they might enjoy it.
I don't know what these bozos would enjoy. I mean, I have a, you know, I'm one of the 93% of Americans who can't stand them. So I don't know, but they could certainly benefit from something, whether it be an Overview Effect blitz for a different type of thinking or who knows what. But there is no unity in the whole there. That's for sure. So
we need to work on it. That's for sure.
But if you decide to do an Overview Effect congressional blitz, which I think would be a lot of fun and a really good idea, you know, I'll certainly throw the space show into it and help you with it. And
see
if we can get people to participate. But I think it'd be a lot of fun and very revealing. And it would be fun to watch how it grows with interested members of Congress year to year, because I suspect the first year the people you visit might be only a handful here and there, because most of them will say, ah, this is crazy, dismissed, this BS and stuff like that. But then as word spreads about it, my suspicion is that it would grow to be something that the members of Congress really look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be, of course, the goal. I mean, I'm sure that I'm not very familiar with lobbying, but I'm sure most Congress members don't look forward to lobbyists coming to their office.
No,
so
but
if you could reverse that, it would be quite a triumph.
Well, I think that's one of the things that you would, because you don't have any legacy that you have to deal with. I mean,
right?
You've got examples of what everyone has done, from Mothers Against Drunk Driving to, you know,
right,
the various things by Marge Storm, or cancer or whatever, but you you have no legacy that you have to keep in place. So you could come in and say, you know, usually you sit around a table and you got two or three people with one or two legislative assistants. Sometimes a member will give you time, but not always. So you come in with a tablet or a 18-inch laptop, and you say, I want to show you what we're talking about. And you give them a 3-minute digital simulation. And maybe you've got the cardboard VR helmets or something, you know, that Space VR talks about. And then after that, here's our program and what we're talking about and how you can play a role in this. And I think, I don't know, maybe, I think they'd probably find that different enough that they'd want to participate.
Right. Well, this has been a very useful brainstorm for me, because I actually hadn't thought of doing that. I was at one such event. It wasn't really lobbying, but there was a an event organized by Ken Cox, who recently passed away. Ken had the Advanced Technology Working Group, which was a subset of NASA back in the day.
Right, he was a good friend of mine and sorely missed.
Yeah, and you know, Ken was responsible really for AIAA picking up the overview effect. I have to say that was tremendously important. But I was at one event that an ATWIG conference had, where it was really just getting together with legislative aides and talking about space. It wasn't that intense, but that's the only experience I've had, and these are really interesting ideas, so thank you, David.
Well, if you decide to take it further, let me know be interested. We're coming up close to the end of the 90-minute show. What should we have been talking about? What have we forgotten? what do you still want to tell everybody or share with everybody?
I think we've really covered it. The Overview Institute is always looking for help, and we are kind of the core organization working on all the issues we've talked about. And I definitely do hope that if anybody's curiosity was piqued by our discussion of the Overview Symposium, there is time to think about going to it. And it would be the trip of a lifetime, I'm sure. It's going to be a watershed event.
I suspect, and I wish I could go, but I don't know if I will be able to or not, but I suspect it will be so different from a typical rah-rah, sis-coom-ba, Mars or technology space conference that it would be a really unique experience. They probably won't live stream it, but I suspect it would be a really rewarding, difficult, and probably perspective-challenging experience for a lot of people.
I think it's going to be different, as you say, and thoughtful, but also stimulating. And it's one of those that you can't know what's going to come of it, but I think something good will, for sure.
Well, I will certainly look forward to talking to you after the symposium is on to learn about it. And if you want to bring other people on, that's fine too. But
we'll
certainly look forward to that follow up. And when do you think your fourth book is out? The fourth version will be available.
Oh, I think probably 2019. I don't think I can do it sooner than that.
Okay.
And that'll be good. I mean, that'll be 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. Yeah, that'll be a good time.
We'll look forward to it, Frank.
Thank you so much, David. And I suspect I'll be back on again talking about that one someday.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you do decide to do an overview of that congressional blitz and a little space VR type of thing for a congressman, David Beaver could do an absolutely superb 5-minute virtual reality simulation for members of Congress and their staff on a laptop. I mean, it would be spectacular, and he knows how to do that. And
I know.
So put him to work.
I'll talk to him about it.
Yeah, or I haven't talked to David in a long time, but we should get back in touch with one another. I think that would be a really cool legislative blitz. So Frank, have a great summer, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Same here, David. You have a great summer, too, and thanks to everybody who listened and asked really great questions today.
Okay, and listeners, before signing off, I have a couple of very quick announcements. Number one, there's no show for Father's Day. My son and his bride are taking me to brunch when I should be doing a space show program, so that's got priority. And now, for Gwen Shotwell, when she is on Thursday, 2 to 3 p.m. California time, I will take emails and calls from you guys, but I expect a lot of traffic, and she is only with us for 60 minutes. So I'm cutting all of my stuff really short to accommodate as many of you with your emails and your calls. The rule is one question only. Don't say, can I ask a follow-up? No. And you need to appreciate the meaning of the word succinct. No long speeches, just give us the essence of what it is you want to ask her, and I'll share that with her, or you can say that yourself if you choose to call. Please don't abuse the privilege. If I am wrong and it's not a very busy time and she has time, by all means call back or email in your speech if you want. But I'm expecting a lot of traffic, and I want to give the microphone to as many people as possible. Everybody else, have a great weekend. It is Father's Day. Remember your dads, and if they're still around, share some good time with them and hugs with them. Everybody have a great space show weekend. Thanks to Frank White and to all of you, and please keep looking up. Goodbye from Frank, myself, and the space show.